Stars in the Bible by Robert C. Newman. The Hebrew word kokav and its Semitic cognates, stars in the ancient Near East, as worshipped, as sources of fortune-telling, and as timekeepers, Babylonian constellations. Stars in the Old Testament, as created, use in prophecy and in curses, identification of particular stars. Stars in the Intertestament period, astrology, in the pseudepigrapha, stars in the New Testament, Star of Bethlehem, use of Old Testament symbolism, other symbolism. Well, that's an abstract. Stars in the Bible by Robert C. Newman. The Hebrew word for star is kokav, and similar words are the standard words for star in other Semitic languages, in Ugaritic, in Akkadian, in Aramaic, in Syriac, and in Arabic. We're not sure where this word is derived from, but these words may have been derived from kavav, burn, in Akkadian, Aramaic, and Arabic, or from kava, roll, revolve, in Arabic. Unlike modern English usage for star, but parallel to the ancient Greek word, the Semitic word for star probably includes planets, comets, meteors, or any bright object in the night sky. Stars in the ancient Near East. Three features of stars were especially important in the ancient Near East and relevant to Old Testament background. These were the worship of stars as gods, divination by the stars, what we call astrology, and stars as timekeepers. Let's have a look at each one of these. Worship of stars. The worship of astronomical objects as gods is quite old and widespread. The Babylonians worshipped the sun god Shamash, the moon god Sin, Ishtar as the planet Venus, and Marduk as the planet Jupiter. And their worship, the Babylonian worship, was influential throughout the whole ancient Near East. This system was later borrowed by the Greeks, and then from them by the Romans, so that our modern planet names are those of the Roman deities, that is to say, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Uranus, Neptune, Pluto had not been discovered, but they were given similar names when they were eventually discovered, and of course Earth was not recognized as a planet. Divination by the stars, or astrology. The belief that the heavenly bodies are divine would encourage the thought that stellar phenomena might be messages for Earth, particularly in a society already disposed to divination or fortune-telling. Old Babylonian texts from about 1800 BC list omens to be inferred from lunar eclipses and other heavenly phenomena. These were later compiled by about 1000 B.C. into the 70-tablet reference work Enuma Anil Enlil, influential throughout the ancient Near East, down to Hellenistic times, connecting specific phenomena of the sun, moon, planets, stars, and weather with events on Earth. Unlike Hellenistic and modern astrology, such predictions typically involve public events, kings, and nations, rather than private individuals. Stars as timekeepers. The worship of stars and the belief they predict earthly events may have arisen from the fact that the stars certainly predict the seasons and sunrise, functioning as calendars and clocks. As the Earth makes its yearly orbit around the sun, the stars from the surface of the Earth appear to move westward over the course of a year, rising about 4 minutes earlier each night, thus providing a convenient set of markers for the seasons. Already by 3000 BC, the Egyptians had noticed that each year the star Sothis, what we call Sirius today, rose just before sunrise at the time of the annual Nile flooding, which of course was a crucial event for Egyptian agriculture. By the Middle Kingdom, about 2100 to 1800 BC, the Egyptians had developed a list of 36 decans, D-E-C-A-N-S, either single stars or constellations, spanning the whole year, with each successively rising with the sun at 10-day intervals. In Mesopotamia, a similar system was developed during the Old Babylonian period, about 1800 to 1500 BC. The position of such stars could also be used to tell time at night when sundials were useless, as tables had been constructed to calibrate the hours of night with the current day and month. So you could look up what the current day and month was and then see that when a particular star arose, that indicated a particular time at night. Babylonian constellations. These have been identified using an astronomical text called Mu'alpin from about 700 BC. Sufficient detail is given in that text so that nearly all the major Babylonian constellations have been identified with reasonable certainty. Many of these constellations are the same as the ancient Greek constellations, which are also ones we use today. So, for instance, our Gemini, twins, was also for the Babylonians a pair of twins. Our Leo, Latin for lion, was a lion, possibly a dog. Corvus, which is Latin for crow, was a raven. Libra, Latin for scales, was a pair of scales. Talking about balance scales there. Taurus, Latin for bull, was a bull. Scorpio, Latin for scorpion, was in fact a scorpion. Capricorn, something we don't have any good translation for, was a goatfish, which is what it was for the Romans as well, a sort of a mergoat, you might say. And Orion was called the true shepherd of the sky. On the other hand, some of the other Babylonian constellations were different than those today. Ursa Major, for instance, was a wagon, whereas the Latin Ursa Major means big bear. One of the English names for this constellation was Charles Wain, Charles Wagon. Don't know where that came from. Cygnus, the swan, and a part of Cepheus, was a panther. Pisces, the fish, and parts of Pegasus and Andromeda, was a large swallow. Canis Major, big dog in Latin, was a bow and arrow. Lyra, the lyre, musical instrument, was a goat. Hercules, a dog. And Ares, the ram, a hired laborer. These differences appear to undermine the rather attractive theory that a gospel in the stars comes down to us from patriarchal times, from Abraham and even earlier. This was proposed back in 1863 by Frances Rolleston in her book Nazareth, which has been very hard to obtain until recently. It's now available in print, and popularized by J.A. Seiss in 1882 in his Gospel of Stars, and E.W. Bullinger in his 1893 book, The Witness of the Stars, both of which have been reprinted frequently. Stars in the Old Testament. The range of the word kokov. Kokov is used 37 times in the Old Testament with two areas of meaning. Most commonly as our word star, for instance, in Genesis 1:16, Exodus 32:13, and then rarely, maybe only once, but no more than three times, as an alternative term for angel, Job 38:7, and perhaps in Isaiah 14:12-13. Both stars and angels are called the hosts of heaven a number of places, for example, in Deuteronomy 4:19. On the one hand, and 1 Kings 22:19 on the other. Some see this as an indication that the stars were thought to be angels, though the connection may be no more than that angels, too, are bright objects in the sky. Others, along with the later theology of the rabbis, explain this usage by seeing angels in charge of each star. We have some precedent for this sort of thing in the book of Daniel, Daniel 10:20, where we see angels over various nations, the prince of Persia and the such. Well, the Old Testament tells us that stars are created by God, Genesis 1:16, Psalm 8:3, and they're under his providential control, Isaiah 40:26, Jeremiah 31:35. Their purposes, to separate the day from the night, and to serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years, both in Genesis 1:14. The sun, of course, marks off the days. That's when it's up, it's daytime, and then when it's down, it's nighttime. The moon indicates the months, and although our months in our modern Western calendar don't strictly correlate with the moon, the lunar calendars of antiquity, and including the Arabic calendar today, very much do work with the moon. The beginning of the moon month is a new moon and such. And the stars, by their position relative to the sun, mark off the seasons. So when the sun is in this particular constellation, then that's the spring. And in another constellation, that's the fall, etc. And the sun moves through the stars as it appears once a year, which from our perspective, getting outside of the Earth and looking at the solar system, that means the Earth moves around the sun once a year. The stars were also created to praise God, Psalm 148, verses 3 through 6, and that might be perhaps by their brightness, mentioned in Daniel 12:3 and Psalm 136:9, or perhaps by their purity, mentioned in Job 25:5, or by their height, Job 22:12, and by their number, Genesis 15:5, so praising God by their brightness, by their purity, by their height, by their number. Surely, the stars form a significant element in what the psalmist meant by saying, "The heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands," Psalm 19, verse 1. The stars are a part of God's self-revelation in nature, his handiwork, pointing beyond themselves to God's brightness, purity, greatness, and power. Since the stars are merely created, God's people are not to worship them, Deuteronomy 4:19, as the pagans do. They are not gods, nor are they eternal, but rather, with the heavens, they're wearing out like clothing and will one day be discarded, as we see in Psalm 102, verses 25 and 26. What about the number of stars? The number of stars, according to Genesis 15:5, is uncountably vast, yet apparently finite, Psalm 147:4, where it speaks of God calling them by name, which would imply a finite length name, presumably. Such a finite number, then. They're often used, occasionally with the sand of the seashore, to illustrate the promise of Abraham to Abraham of a multitude of descendants. So in Genesis 15:5, 22:17, 26:4, in Exodus 32:13, Deuteronomy 1:10, 10:22, 28:62. Provisional fulfillment of this promise had already occurred when Israel entered Canaan, Deuteronomy 1:10, 10:22, but might be lost again by disobedience if Israel brought itself under the covenant curses, Deuteronomy 28:62. In his military census, David feared to count all of Israel, 1 Chronicles 27:23, perhaps thinking that such a count would be tempting God, who had promised an uncountable multitude. Stars in prophetic contexts. In prophetic context, stars are used symbolically to represent prominent individuals, for instance, Joseph's brothers in one of his dreams, Genesis 37, 9 and 10, or the coming ruler in Balaam's vision, Numbers 24:17, or the king of Babylon in Isaiah's taunt, Isaiah 14:12 and 13. In the last of these, this taunt of Isaiah against the king of Babylon, the symbol seems to represent the king's exaltation, and his subsequent abasement is pictured by being cast down to the earth. In Daniel's eschatological promise to the wise, Daniel 12:3, the wise are to shine like the brightness of the heavens, like the stars forever and ever. Stars in curse context. The darkening of the stars, sun and moon, is a motif in curse contexts, including Job's lament regarding the day of his birth, Job 3:9. Job's characterization of God's power and judgment, Job 9:7. Kohelet, writer of Ecclesiastes, picture of old age, Ecclesiastes 12:2. Isaiah's oracle against Babylon, Isaiah 13:10. The locust plague of Joel, Joel 2:10, and the eschatological darkness, which the locust plague of Joel foreshadows, Joel 3:15. Particular stars. A number of terms occur in the Hebrew Old Testament that appear to refer to stars and constellations and such, but the meaning of terms apparently used for such particular stars, planets, and star groups are rather uncertain. Due to the infrequency of their occurrence in the Old Testament, they often occur only one or two or three times. The lack of specifying detail in such contexts, as they're perhaps mentioned along with some other such objects, but nothing said about how they relate to one another. The rarity of identifiable cognate expressions in the other Semitic languages, and so you may not have anything to connect it with in Arabic or Akkadian or something of that sort. And the diversity of renderings in the ancient versions. We have the old Greek version, what we call a Septuagint, and then a couple of revisions of that later in the first and second centuries. and then we have the old Latin translation and such. And when we look through these, we often find that the same term, even in one of those versions, is rendered different ways in different contexts. Well, these particular terms and what they might mean is discussed in some detail in the article that is mentioned here under further reading at the end of this talk. We move on to stars in the Intertestament period. Babylonian astronomy and astrology continued to develop, spreading into the Greek world, where the more sophisticated Greek geometry was applied to these studies. An emphasis on individual astrology develops. Remember earlier I said it related largely to kings and nations and such. Emphasis on individual astrology develops based on the appearance of the heavens at the time of one's birth. And this sort of a procedure reached its zenith in the Hellenistic city of Alexandria. Numerous astrological papyri, writings that give horoscope of particular individuals, survive from this period in Egypt, where the very dry climate away from the Nile River has preserved many of these in trash piles and such, along with other writings. And this is somewhat rather close to the sort of astrology that is done today, if you hire a professional astrologer to do your horoscope for you, rather than just glancing in the newspaper, which is a somewhat different ballgame. See my discussion in the PowerPoint astrology on these matters. In the Greek Old Testament, the Hebrew word kokov is rendered about equally often by two Greek words, auster and ostron, the latter usually in the plural. As best we can tell, there appears to be no strong distinction in the meaning of these two different Greek terms. In the Pseudepigrapha, there are a number of writings which come from mostly the Intertestament period or early Christian centuries that appear to be done largely by Jews, some few by Christians perhaps, or modified by Christians, that were never accepted in the Greek or Latin church, but did receive some acceptance in the Ethiopic church or the Georgian church or something of that sort. Two of these works, First Enoch and Jubilees, claim that astrology was taught to humans by the angels who sinned in Genesis chapter 6, 1 through 4, the sons of God who came down to the daughters of men, etc. So we see this referred to in 1 Enoch 8, 1 through 4, and in Jubilees 8, 3. Here we learn that Sarag and Nahor practiced astrology, but Abraham was turned away from it by, quote, a word that comes to his heart, unquote, one night while he's watching the stars to make predictions. This is given for us in Jubilees 12, 16 to 21. Stars, we are told, in 1 Enoch 18, 13 through 15, are mountains of fire driven through the heavens by winds, 1 Enoch 18, 4. A large section of 1 Enoch, chapters 72 to 82, is devoted to a detailed description of the movements and nature of the sun, moon, and stars, allegedly given to Enoch by the angel Uriel. We move on then to stars in the New Testament. The most famous star in the New Testament is what we call the Star of Bethlehem, which brought the Magi from the east to worship Jesus, Matthew 2, 1 through 12. This star has been variously identified as a supernova, a comet, a conjunction of planets, an object like the pillar of fire which guided Israel, an angel, or is purely fictional. The behavior of the star, after the Magi had consulted Herod, it went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child fits, was best fit some localized supernatural phenomenon, though some have suggested ways of interpreting this as an object at astronomical distances. I have some discussion of this, which I developed after I had written this article that this talk is developed from, and that can be found in my PowerPoint talk, The Star Bethlehem. There I suggest a hybrid phenomenon that is partly natural and can be investigated even today with a computer planetarium program, and partly localized supernatural phenomenon. And you can have a look at that. Probably the star is to be understood as a fulfillment of Balaam's prophecy, star rising in Jacob, Numbers 24:17, and as symbolic of Jesus. The New Testament makes use of Old Testament symbolism for stars. For instance, it connects the vast number of stars with a promise to Abraham of uncountable descendants. See that in Hebrews 11, 12. In associating stars with angels, Revelation 1, verse 20, 9, 1, possibly 12, 4. And in seeing eschatological signs in the sun, moon, and stars, for example, in Luke 21, 25, though here, in the New Testament, the emphasis on stars falling is in Matthew 24, 29, Mark 13, 25, Revelation 6, 13, more than upon their being darkened, though that does occur in Revelation 16, 10. One of the trumpet plagues of Revelation, found in chapter 8, verses 10, 11, consists of a star falling on the rivers and poisoning their waters. This effect seems very similar, particularly with the other trumpet plagues around it, to an effect that seems to have taken place in a disastrous meteor fall that wiped out the dinosaurs and ended the Cretaceous period, which has been discussed in the scientific circles quite a good deal in the last 30 years. Other symbolism. The picture of wandering stars is used as a vivid picture of the heretics denounced in Jude 13. Though the term wandering star can just be a standard word for planets, probably here it has a sense of comets moving away from the sun into the darkness beyond, rather than as planets, which although they appeared erratic in their movements to the ancients, always kept coming back, and that was certainly widely known then. The morning star is explicitly a symbol for Jesus in Revelation 22:16, and probably also in Revelation 2:28 and 2 Peter 1:19. In the first two of these, 22:16 in Revelation 2:28, the reference is apparently to the planet Venus as the morning star, a symbol perhaps of Jesus' first coming as the bright light shining in the darkness before the coming of day. In 2 Peter 1:19, by contrast, the reference seems to be to the sun as the morning star, with Jesus' second coming in view, when darkness will be entirely banished. The sun, moon, and stars of Joseph's dream in Genesis 37 appear again in the heavenly sign of the pregnant woman in Revelation 12:1, which has been variously identified as Mary, as Israel, or more generically as the people of God. Perhaps she and the dragon in this passage are also to be associated with the constellations in the heavens of Virgo and Draco. Virgo, the virgin, and Draco, the dragon. Well, that's our tour here. For further reading, see the article Kokov, from which this talk has been condensed, which I wrote for the New International Dictionary of Old Testament Theology and Exegesis. That article gives more detail and references to other literature, and it makes an attempt to identify all the terms that we think may refer to stars and constellations in the Old Testament. Well, that's the end of our quick tour here of stars in the Bible, and thank you very much for your attention.